All right, ladies and gents, welcome to another edition of CompTalk here on Riptide's podcast, Luke's Lounge, where we dissect everything bodyboarding on the international stage, the national and local levels also included in there too. Joined by my loyal and incredibly good-looking co-host, Sean Gregory Cooper. Sean, it's great to have you on the air, sir.
Thanks, Luke. Aloysius. They're delicious. Thanks, mate. That's a beautiful thing to say. It props me up. Makes me feel good.
Oi, bruz, I saw photos back in your 20s with a blonde sandy mop. I saw you standing there, Gary Beck. I've seen them all before. I've seen you being chaired up the beach of South Cronulla after beating Mitch Rawlins in that incredible South Cronulla Pro Final there. Like, don't be modest, all right? Absorb the compliment. Keep on coming.
Zoom in on the photo, mate. The fucking acne everywhere. Fucking.
it's only to be natural at that age, mate. We all had it everywhere. I remember I was on this weird ass cream, eh? I reckon I had a blowout at 14 or 15, just pimples everywhere. So disheartened by it. And my mum got me on this Benzac acne cream. And it barely worked. I think it just helped more of my mental state and ego a little bit. But, yeah, part and parcel being grown, mate.
Oh, man. Man, I was on the hard stuff. There was this I don't know if they still have it. I think they do. It's like these gnarly tablets. And I don't recommend them to anyone. Like, they rattled me, eh? Like, I got so sunburnt and it like, massive side effects, like, terrible. And it didn't even cure it. Like, I kept getting them. So it was like, that was like a massive fail. I'm hoping they don't give that stuff out anymore. Anyway, let's change the subject.
Yeah, fucking, I'm gonna eat your heart out there. But let's get into the IBC, brother. And we've just had the Maldives Pro for 2024 go down in the city of Mele. And It's been interesting to watch. It's been enjoyable at times, but overall in my rating, I'm going to have to say that it's been a little bit of a flop. There are a lot of flop moves in it. There are a lot of quality moves in it for the size of the waves, but overall, that wave to me, personally, in my opinion, I know it's in the Pacific. I know it's a different, you know, kind of zone. It's tapping into different industries over there, different officials, you know, different back pockets getting filled up with cash. I totally get it. But at the same time, it's not really a boog wave, Greg, Sean Gregory. And it's kind of killing me a little bit because I see the best in the world going at it. And I know there's going to be slow comps and average comps and, you know, waves don't always come to the party, but it just doesn't seem like a fucking boog wave at any stage. What do you reckon?
I thought about going to Maldives for my honeymoon and I pulled the pin because it was too fucking far away from Australia, let alone South America. So fuck knows how they're getting guys there. They must be paying guys. Well done on the government to putting money into it and into the sport. Like, you've got to take your hats off to them for that. But the wave is fucked, mate. Like, oh, my God. Like, it's like the every year it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And, the money, it's attractive because it's an event and it's got money and I'm hoping the riders are getting their money, but it, like, as for a wave quality, it's pretty fucking. I mean, it was terrible. You got to give it to the boys though, like, and the girls. Sorry, to the all of them.
Juniors.
They surfed very, very well for how bad it was.
Really certainly. Well. And when you look back on the heat replays and you look through the finals and everything, there were moments, you know, like the finals day started off pretty slow. It was kind of a pretty small and weak well, but throughout the day it built. There were a couple of pulsing sets, you know, 3 foot range was probably the peak of it. But at the same time, you know, variable winds came in and there were some trades at the end and it definitely had many faces. But I think since that, you know, we mentioned it last year, so I'm not going to harp on again, but like the bridge in the background, the infrastructure has definitely fucked the shape of the wave. And it just seems that like even some of the good ones out there, when the sets are rolling in, you're only getting 1 to 2 bites at the cherry. And when you're having, you know, a 3 to 4 man heat, 3 man heat, you know, down to the man on man, women on women, junior on juniors, it's just not allowing enough opportunity for people to go, you know, back to back with waves and get heaps of scores on the board and kind of let the best rider win. I know that's competition and sometimes it does come down. Like we just watched the Olympics at Chopes and obviously there was a couple of, you know, heats, especially towards the quarter, semis and finals that were wave starved and there were only like 3 to 4 waves available of really good quality in those heats. But when you don't have a wave of consequence and you have a pretty soft wave like this, it leaves a lot to be desired. You know, you look at a lot of the waves on tour, you look at the South American legs, like Iquique, I know Arica wasn't there this year, but like, you know, you can look at Fronton at the end, hopefully we'll be there this year. We'll get into that a little bit later, but it just, it lacks the punch, but they all got it done. I really felt Dave Hubbard was the form Boog in the men's division. He was just cruising through. He's a 3-times winner of the event, winning the men's division once and the drop knee twice, especially last year to clinch his, is it his 10th drop knee world title?
Yeah, 10th. Yep.
10th, you know, and then you had obviously the regulars, Tristan Roberts, Emirios Oliveiras, Pierre-Louis Costes in the mix, Amore surfed really well in the early rounds, and a huge shout out to a previous Australian champion who's gone missing in the wilderness over the last 5 years. I don't know what he's been doing, but he's come back with a fucking almighty splash. Hayato Enokaido from Japan went all the way from round one all the way into the quarterfinals against Dave Hubbard, going down to Dave Hubbard, who was the eventual second place getter of the whole event in the men's division. So huge shout out to the Japanese man. He was putting on a show.
Is that the guy that won the Aussie titles here in Australia?
It is, man. I went back and I checked. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. He did some
really good work. I remember that.
Yeah, remember the IBA days? And I was just like, no way.
That's so cool, man.
Not the days, the ABA days.
ABA, yeah. That's so cool. I mean, yeah, like when she got into the quarterfinals, the heats were stacked and they were all, I mean, anyone could have won those heats, which kind of happened. Like the Tristan Amire heat was extremely close. Like if you watch it, that definitely could have gone either way. I reckon if somebody argued that it should have gone the other way, I wouldn't argue with them. But you know, on the same side of the coin, I mean, that's the thing about close heats. No one's ever going to be satisfied. You're always going to have people on both sides of it. You know what I mean?
Dude, imagine getting Osler on for a chat about that quarterfinal and just feel and hearing, the South African pride and passion come out of that Saffa's mouth. Like, I swear to God, he's got like springbok antlers over the top of his bed rest. You know, I mean, he's got like, you know, he's got big like caped line sheets and all this sort of stuff. Like he lives and breathes that South African passion. And I reckon he would have been blowing up the Lux. Even if he watched it, I doubt he watched it. But if he watched it, fuck, Tristan Roberts, mate, he won every day of the week.
Yeah. I've got it on in the background now and like, mate, they're just going ham on each other, eh? Like Tristan just doesn't give up. He just keeps going, mate. Like he's an amazing, I would like, God, it'd be a nightmare to surf against him. But I think Amita kind of got away with one in that one.
Let's break down that last wave down because I know you and me were talking about it beforehand. So There's scores. Scores are locked at 14.25 to Amire, with Tristan in the lead with 5 minutes to go, and Amire having 13.25. And then he needs a 6.26 in the last 5 minutes to overtake Tristan Roberts. Pops a backy ARS kind of thing that looks dodged at the start, only a 2 foot wave, probably not the biggest set wave of that heat or that quarterfinal. And comes down at a pretty funky landing, just flops through in the wash and kind of has to kick out of it to make the wave count. And gets awarded a 6.5 for it and pushes himself into the lead with 14.5 over Tristan's 14.25. And then the waves kind of, or the set waves anyway, go quiet. Tristan has a little reply, can't really get what he needs. Priority swaps a couple of times and that's all she wrote. But it's a little bit dubious, that decision. Again, could go either way, but it just seemed that flip wasn't landed as cleanly as possible and left a little bit to be desired there.
Yeah, like it didn't have the land in the flats type of feel. I know the waves didn't really govern it, but he kind of landed on top of the wave and then bounced down. And it was like, oh, 6.5. Like, that's a pretty solid score in a way. I don't know, man. Because Tristan got a couple of sevens and he was doing like two maneuvers on those waves. So it wasn't just one maneuver. So, you know, if he did two maneuvers and got a seven, what he did one maneuver and got 0.5 of a difference. Like, oh, I don't know about that.
Man, it almost sounds like to me that you're indicating the judges might have a little case of Sotavere's fever at the moment. I reckon they're struck by the Canarian and they are just all hot and bothered over his surfing. What do you reckon?
The thing about him, mate, like, he just took it in his stride and then just fucking wiped the floor with everyone. So, like, good on him. Fuck him. Like, it's not, he's just doing his job. So, yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think they're into him. But, I mean, it's fucking hard. Like, Tristan's been on top for so long and he's so strong. It's almost like sometimes they'll judge Tristan to Tristan, you know what I mean? Like, on his level of himself, that definitely happens to the best riders. Instead of judging the heat, they judge the rider, you know what I mean?
Agreed.
So, you know, whatever. But that, I think he got out of, it happens to all of them. All of them get this at some stage, but I reckon he got out of jail on that one. Why don't we talk about Yuri Valadella? He's like a fucking warhorse, mate. Like, he just won't go away, will he? Like, can you imagine you turn up to these events and being like, oh my God, this guy's here again? Like, he's 39 years old.
I think. How long do you reckon he's been competing on the world tour? We should almost get stats up on him, mate. It has to be two decades.
Well, my last heat I ever surfed in was 2004, and he was in it. And
two decades right there.
So there's two, and he'd been surfing before that. So, you know, I think he might be competing for fucking Stewart's longest man on tour or something, eh? What do you reckon?
Oh, mate, 110%. And he's still a good-looking rooster. Like, you look at him, I'm looking at his profile right now, like, what kind of Brazilian backstrap meat are you eating at home, brother? Like, this is ridiculous. Some Brazilian barbecue is going on with this gentleman because he is a strapping young man. He looks like he's fucking late 20s and the bloke's just got that little bit of salt and pepper in the beer. But, nah, hats off him. He's doing something right. And Yuri's competitive surfing, competitive bodyboarding, I should say, is unrivaled, or, you know, kind of up there with like the top 5 to 10 guys at all times. Like, I mean, his skill set's still amazing. Probably not at that age with the new school technique of, say, like the Tristan Roberts and the Solaveras, or, you know, in anyone in like that kind of category, even like a Capdeville or you know, in that sort of league, but his knowledge, his like wave knowledge, his competitive sense, and just his will to win is fucking spectacular.
No, it's amazing. Like, I just, like, if he's 39 years old, he's been doing this for 20 odd years. Like, what he must be just a lord in Brazil. He must sell himself. He gets his money from, like, being a, like, God knows what, but something
only in fan.
Brazil. Like, yeah, but don't you, like, how is he still there? Like, the situation in Brazil in bodyboarding and all that, like, must be, it must be still there. Like, maybe there's money there. You know what I mean? Maybe we're living in the wrong country, mate.
Get over there. Get, get a couple of wedges, couple of big plates of meat and, you know, some volleyball on the beach and away we go.
Yeah. Bums out on the beach. Fucking take me there now, mate. Let's go.
Mind it. But, thinking about the you had Pierre taking over Yuri there in the quarterfinal with 14.25 versus 8. So very close quarterfinals leading up to that. You know, you had Gabriel Braga just defeating Maxim Castillo in quarter number two with Braga posting a 12.35 and Maxim coming with 10.25. You know, and even in the first one with Hayato and Takedo against Dave posting 14.25 and Hayato 11.75. So really there's not huge discrepancies. But then when you move into the semis, this is where Solovares really steps up and he kind of schooled Pierre at his own game, the backflip game, and just pound on those rights and really put in a performance, which was demonstrated in the separation of the scores, 17.25 by the Canarian versus the Frenchman's 13.35. You know, Pierre's arguably one of the world's greatest bodyboarders and the young blood, 22-year-old coming up in the scene, kind of, stamp his authority there.
Yeah, Pierre looked really good, man. He I like his new setup and that, and for how crap the waves were, like if you watched him, his technique and style on the waves, I thought was exceptionally above everyone else's. Like he looked good on the small waves, and he just kind of like that was the end of his road basically in that semi because Amidev like really like kicked it up a notch, and I think it's because it was Pierre that why he kicked it up a notch because he just went ham, eh? But yeah, shit, like, I mean, Pierre did really well, man. That's a really good result for him for his world title campaign because he hasn't done all the events. So he's got a couple of good, solid results now. So hopefully by the back end of the year, the next one coming up being Sintra, he's won that before. So, you know, all the best to him for the rest of the year. I think he's got a big mountain to climb because somebody's got a massive lead, but if anyone can do it, it'll definitely be Pierre, I reckon.
Did you see his Instagram post?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's pretty heartfelt.
Yeah, he's there to win, man. It's as simple as that. So like every dollar he spends is to go to that contest and win. And, I mean, we're lucky to have him, to watch him, really, eh? It's a good moment in the sport because, like, who knows how long him and Amore are going to be around. So, fingers crossed they're around for a few more years to come so we can watch him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love watching them battle, and, you know, when they go out and surf their heats, they're ridiculously tuned in and to their surroundings and what needs to be done, and it's only like the little tiny clutch one percenters and moments that separate them. So full shout out to Pierre. He's still probably my favorite bodyboarder to watch of all time, and just watching him compete is just such a spectacle. You don't know what you're going to get, but Solovera is taking him out there in the semifinals. We move on to the final, the Hawaiian Dave Hubbard coming up against Oliveira's, and some have been calling a little bit of controversy here with the judging. I slightly disagree. I think it was just fair enough. It could have gone either way again, much like, you know, subjective judging can. But with the moves, with Dave Hubbard. So Amire came out and got a really nice projected backflip ARS, whatever you like to call it, cross legs, comes around really smooth, right out the back of the wave on a solid set wave, definitely one of the bigger ones of the heat or the final, and gets awarded an 8. And Dave replies with a similar set wave, maybe slightly smaller, classic Dave Hubbard ARS out the back, and moves into the inside section and pushes another ARS out, which probably wasn't one of his best, but still got around and got it done considering how much the wave had tapered off, and was awarded a 7.5. And I guess the controversy there is a one move wave versus a two move wave. And you'd have to say that looking back over it, in my opinion, and kind of crunching the little one percenters, like I was saying before, and really understanding what the judges were looking for, if you are popping that big move out the back off the largest set wave, you can score highly in the excellent range between 8 to 10 points on a one maneuver wave, where Dave's was definitely very good and his smooth style was incredible. And as I said before, he was one of the form boogers in the men's division. It just didn't have the same crispness, or, you know, they don't have the Dave Hubbard fever either, the judges. I feel like Silveras has got them all sewn up like COVID in 2022, mate. Like it is the Amire show at the moment. So yeah, could have gone either way. I'm kind of feeling Solovera deserved the win there.
Yeah. Like the only thing I'd argue is throughout the contest, like the maneuvers getting two pretty solid maneuvers were getting scored higher than the singles. And like, I get it. Like that one maneuver was pretty solid kind of thing. My argument would have been it should have been more even. Like, it, even though it was 0.5 of a point difference, I reckon they were kind of like semi same. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, it was so close to call. Like, it's kind of hard to make a comment on that. But like, I would have thought that Dave's might have been opposite those scores. I don't know if that would have affected it. Affected the end result? Probably not, but I'd have to have a look. But like, how close was it at the end?
Was super close. That probably would have affected the result. Amire's comes in with a total of 13.75, Dave a 13.5.
Oh, that's what I mean. So
I know.
In my opinion, the 0.5, I reckon, should have been flipped, and that would have been the result.
Look, like, and I totally take your point. Because think about it. So right, that opening exchange, if it goes on an even keel and they're both awarded an 8 because they've surfed their waves the best they possibly can. And I know wave selection and just the luck of the draw sometimes of how big the wave is comes into it, but you're totally right. If it's a one two move wave and then there's the discrepancy at the end there of 0.25, does Dave feel hardly done by? Possibly, for sure. I'm 50-50 on it, but I can see both ways. Deny anyone, you know, the opinion of Dave winning either.
Are you smelling a bit of a conspiracy here? Like, what? Did I just unfold something in front of me?
I reckon they all need rapid antigen test, the fucking judges, because they have got a Solovera's fever, mate. It is running hot, cunt. It is running hot. They are dripping in Canarian sweat at the moment up there, those judges. They are loving it.
Where's the fucking committee from? Are they from the Canaries or Chile? I can't remember. The IBC. Let's fucking look it up, because I'm smelling a fucking rat here, Luke. Oh my God.
On this judging panel, like, you had Josh DeBone over there last year. If that fucking Port Mac Lord was there this year, I doubt that'd fucking happen, mate. All right? Where are the Australians in this organization. I know it's going to ruffle some feathers. Look, we still haven't got to the juniors yet, and we've got to speak about that in a second because we've got some Aussie pride there to talk to and some beautiful gold to salivate over. But, like, man, it's just these are the one percenters. Like, I guess, look, okay, let's put it this way. Can't be too harsh because if you look back in the Olympics recently with surfing in there, you and me have spoken off air. We've listened to Swellian podcast. We've dissected what happened in the final against Jack Robinson, the Australian, versus Carly Vass, the Tahitian. And there was an issue with priority at the start where old mate Carly paddled for a wave, and it was a bombing wave. And he took three or four strokes, should have been deemed as a priority error. Jack should have got the first priority, and that would have been the difference between the gold and the silver medal because there were three other rideable waves or bombs in that heat that were worthy of scoring. So that's the one percenters in those 30-minute finals that are just crushing. So, yeah, man. It's
I mean, we should have had the fucking gold. It's as simple as that. It's fucking – that was a fucking joke. But, like, look
– it's the competitive – side of fucking shorty coming out. I love it. That's how you win two Headlands comps, you motherfuckers.
Yeah, you know it. But the I mean, the Maldives going, like, you know, it's fine. It's full respect to Amit here, like, killed it. Well done. He was pretty much the best competitor. Well, the two best competitors in the event were in the final, in my opinion, and
agree.
You know, could have gone either way, and good on him for winning. He's won two in a row. How fucking good is that? Like, the close heats are always the worst because everyone's going to have a fucking opinion about it. So, you know, it is what it is. So, but I reckon Dave Hubbard needs to fucking sponsor the event next time so we can get it over the line.
Yeah, a little bit of back sheesh. Take one of the Swellies. Fill the back pockets if he doesn't get the first place. But looking at the prize money breakdown, it was $5,000. I think it's US for first place, $4,000 for second place there in the men's, and similar on the women's side. So,
mate, it would have cost fucking $4,000 to fucking get there, man.
I know, bro. I thought that when I heard the prize money yell out. It's kind of like, Jesus Christ. Hopefully the sponsors of these individuals forked out because, which I doubt, like, you know, knowing the bodybuilding industry at certain times, like, I don't think many of them would have all their tickets paid for and whatever. If they did, amazing. If not, it's, again, something that we need to look at within the organization of the IBC and the sport to try and make these things more affordable because it's just, yeah, as you said, like, even from Australia to go to the Maldives, it's fucking cooey.
Yeah,
you
know what, man. I mean,
like, it's Timbuktu, mate. It's fucking that far. You couldn't really pay me to go there unless I was properly getting paid. You know what I mean? Like, and then you. It's a bit of a contradiction, but you know, and then you expect, like, you know, Europeans and South Americans and everyone else from the other side of the globe to come over, and if they go home empty-handed in those opening rounds, like, you want to hope they're scoring a boat trip somewhere on the island because fuck, man.
Yeah, man. But, I mean, they're obviously getting the fucking riders there, so we're eating our own words here, man, because if you go through the men's, the women's, and the juniors, there's fucking so many people in the event. So we don't know shit, man. Like, it's working. Whatever they're doing, it's working. So,
yeah, I just hope that it's above board and, like, all the athletes are getting, you know, not certain athletes are just getting little, you know, I guess, magic carpet ride, so to speak, to the event. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a young nobody, so to speak, on the world tour coming up and you don't have that name yet in the draw card for the event, I hope you are still getting a similar passage to the event in regards to some of the top-tier riders. Because the top-tier riders should have their sponsors paying for it regardless because they're doing the world tour and it is for the sport of bodyboarding. Someone coming up, if they're, you know, like, you know, for example, Jai Taylor had a GoFundMe page the winner of the junior men's. And I think he had a goal of 10,000 on there. He got 2.5 or close to $3,000, which is still amazing. It's sick that people put in. That's all time. But at the same time, how much did that trip cost him? He had his fucking, I think his grandmother or his auntie go over with him, you know what I mean? And like, epic to see him making it happen. But how much was her ticket? How much was his ticket? What was the accommodation like? You know, what was going on with the food and the transfers and just anything in general? I'm not trying to poke holes in it. I'm just trying to be a realist and think to myself, you know, fuck, I think like the juniors' first prize was $2,500 US, which is still pretty sick. Like, I'm not bagging that. I'm just thinking to myself, logistically, how are you going to chase the world tour as a mainstream rider, or make it on the world tour as a mainstream rider with all those like different destinations that kind of haven't been, what's the word I'm looking for? Fuck, it's a political government term they always use. It's dropped out of
well,
my head.
Well, the thing is exactly what you're saying. Like how do you consistently like be Yuri Valadara and stay on tour? That's the biggest question, because you can always do it as a one-off. You save a shitload of money and you plan it and you do it. Because that's the realistic, that's kind of like, that's your option, in my opinion, for a year or even 2 years. But to stay on there like Yuri, like I just don't know how it's possible. Like, there's no money. Like, Ben Player's not paying for Jai Taylor's fucking ticket. That's for show. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, I'm doing maybe Yuri's got like this epic drug ring going, you know what I mean? Where he's just kind of at the top, kind of passing out a couple of packages here and there, and maybe taking it over to certain destinations. And who knows, Coops? It all, you know, all ends, it's all starts well, ends well, you know what I mean? Like, it could just be the game plan you need to have. Like, I did hear on the broadcast that a lot of the riders do have jobs and businesses and things that do keep them afloat. Like, I guess you look at Dave Hubbard, they've got boards, that's all kind of, you know, there, and I'm sure there could be tax write-offs and incentives within a business like that because of the travel and everything. So, you know, hats off to Dave for that. But I just look at other people on there and I think to myself, like a Maxim Castillo, like epic boog, he's going hard, he's chasing the world tour. He might not be a world champion one day, or who knows, he might be. He might just have an absolute glitch year and just go crazy. But how is he affording to be on that tour? You know, like Ethan Capdeville, working at a surf school with his dad in France, which is epic. What a sick lifestyle. But saving up all his pennies to then throw towards this comp and then having to bail out in his heat because he's sick and couldn't compete, goes home with no prize money essentially, with his tail between his legs, and needs to start over again, getting back in the water with groms or grown adults every day, teaching them to boog and surf. It's kind of like, I don't know how long you can sustain it.
No, well, that's the thing. It's just not going to be sustainable. Yeah, but like, live the dream for a little bit if that's what you're into. I think it's it's worth a try. In my opinion, I'd be doing a couple of surf trips and trying to get into the Shark Island Challenge and giving Luke O'Connor a call if it was fucking me. But I think I know what's a better option.
Yeah, I mean, but like thank you. That's very kind of you giving Mark Sadler, the old Presidente, a call to, and Sammy Venn, the secretary. The boys would come together and hopefully work out a lineup for 2025. But I guess the carrot that's dangled there in front of all these riders is a world title. And that means a lot to a lot of people. And I get it. Like, that's greatness. Like, you can say that you've won a world title as a bodyboarder, essentially the best bodyboarder in competition in the world in your division at that time. That's amazing. I'm so into it, and I hope people continue to keep chasing. It's not to bag this whole scenario. It's just trying to make it affordable and simplistic and sustainable. It's such a cliche word, sustainability or being sustainable, but it really needs, I cringe every time I say it, but it needs to be just that, because you're going to have these people fall off after a period of time, and you're not going to be able to have them, you know, continue to be at the top of the top. You know what I mean? I look at this world tour and there's amazing riders on their coupes, some fucked up riders. Like, honestly, like, there really is a high quality of riding. When I watch all these comps, I get amazed at what they're doing on the waves. I'm not taking away from the riders. I love it. I really do. Like, I can't say that enough. I just think to myself, how many more riders could be on there? How many more fucking boog lords and queens out there are sitting on their hands because they can't get the funds together, they don't like the dictatorship, and they're over the travel and the sacrifice that doesn't really repay them in the end, you know? Like, it's a real tough one. But let's get away from the negativity and move on to something super positive. We might have missed out on the golden surfing, Sean Gregory Cooper. We came home with the fucking golden bodyboard in the junior men's final. Guy Taylor, 2 times Australian champion from the sunny coast, bringing it home with a total of 14 against Michele Adegaarda, total of 8.95. Smoked him with 2 big innies out of the bowl. And Jai, you fucking legend, brother. I'm so stoked for you. That was legit.
Yeah, right. How's how he did it? Doing something fucking different. For Christ's sakes, finally. Like, somebody's listening. Finally, you get an Aussie on there and they do something fucking different. Like, hallelujah, brother. Because that thing was sick. That innie was epic, man. And
what?
Fucking, he schooled it. Like, it was, he had style. I watched his heats and he strategized it like very, very mature. And, I mean, the waves probably, I surfed with him at the wave pool, and the conditions probably rooted him. Like, he was, especially coming from the fucking sunny coast, like, they're pretty much surfing backwash, going back out the back, aren't they, on the sunny coast? But
fucking oath.
That's pretty much what he had to deal with here. So he was at home, and fucking, how good's that? Like, it was so, so sick to see, man, and sick to see, you know, we've got a junior out there and killing it. That's what we want.
100%. You can see his post-heat interview with the Pommy and Mr. Barber, that he's mentioned going to front on, and obviously in the junior series, it's not your top four best results and the points accumulating as you go through. You only have to win one event or whatever you come in that the highest scoring event that you have plus front on goes into deciding.
Really?
Yes, a junior world title. So Jai Taylor now has one event. He's nailed it. So there's no more than he can do. And he's going to go into front on knowing that if he finishes higher than any other person who has won another event, or someone who hasn't, he's essentially got it in the bag. Plus, the prize money at front on is a lot
more. Can we just fucking all listen to what we just heard? That why the fuck aren't they doing that for the men's and the women's? Like, that's a way better option, man. So, like, people don't have to go and do 50 events. Like,
yeah, but they want them there, bruh. Like, imagine if you were a promoter.
No, I get that.
This back tour and just being like, hey, we're old mates, Pierre's won a Kike, and now he's not going to turn up at Antofagasta, he's not going to turn up at Arica, he's not going to do whatever, because he's got his score in the bag, he's going to spend time with his family, he's going to go surf freeway, like free boog and make clips like he does and blow our minds, and then he's going to turn up at front on, fresh and ready to go, and kick some fucking ass. So, like, I see it both ways. I think for the juniors at this moment, it's probably more attainable just because they wouldn't have the money or the backing behind them and, like, school commitments and all that kind of jazz that you'd have to consider. But, yeah, I take your point on board too, sorry, that, like, it would be ideal for the athletes, I guess, but probably just not for the promoters or the sponsors of those events. They don't get the big names to.
Oh, I just see that if it keeps going the way it's going, like we're kind of having 2 years in a row where it's been flaky at certain events, and you've already dropped off events. Guys are going to lose interest. Like, you know, they're going to go, fuck this. I'm not spending my money on this. I'm going to fucking Shark Island. Simple as that.
Yeah, so, great.
Like that's where they've got to be careful, because, you know, if you're not going to have Eureka, and then you're going to turn up to Maldives and it's a piece of shit, and then we've got to go to Sintra, and then if that's a flop, which it can be good, but it can be bad as well. I don't know. I can see Pierre kind of nestling into his little house in Portugal and being one happy man, in my opinion. But, you know, like you got to adapt to the sport. Like, I just don't know how that some of these guys just keep doing it. I know we keep saying the same thing, but it just baffles me. The amount it costs to get to South America from Australia, like, you can talk to me about it, because my goodness, it's fucking expensive. It's so expensive, man. So that's one trip.
And a recent Mexico trip we'll have to touch on later. But yeah. Price, but dude, going back to Jai, man, he took out Ethan Perez in his, I'm pretty sure it was a quarter, no, in his semi, and Ethan Perez in the men's division made it all the way to heat one, round five, and getting taken down by Hayato Endokaido, again, a previous Australian champion. Hayato getting a total of 14 and Ethan 12.2, so not too much separating them there. And to have Ethan go so deep in the men's draw, to have him then come out in the juniors and get beaten by our own Jai Taylor. It's good signs for Jai, you know what I mean? It was a really close heat, 11.55 with Ethan Perez's score versus Jai's 12.05. So full credit to both the riders there. It was a close heat. But, yeah, for Jai to get the rub of the green there and to outsurf Ethan after he'd been competing with the men, it indicates that there's a bright future for young Jai.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I reckon there's a couple more in Australia that we kind of aren't talking about too. So, like, you know, hence what we were talking about before, like whether we can get them there or just get something going in Australia where they all compete against each other. That's how we grow, get Australia back on tour, basically. I think we need to focus here in Australia on these grommets massively, because that's how we get back into it. You know what I mean? Because it's been a bit of a hiatus, hasn't it?
In regards to us having some groms coming through.
Yeah. Don't you reckon?
For sure, but I think it does feed back into, I was only having a discussion on Instagram today about, you know, how probably we had the fall of the ABA, and, you know, Benny Oborne did such an amazing job there for such a period of time and really pumped out some epic comps and, you know, allowed that kind of national feeder tour to then go into the world tour, and people had somewhere to springboard off. I guess Groms these days are looking, you know, and it's definitely turned around, like, you know, the Cold Coast Bodyboard Club coming alive and well. You've got the Newey Bodyboarding Club. You've got what's the one in Sydney? You know what? I've just forgotten off the top of my head. I see their posts all the time. Fuck. Southside Bodyboarding Club, or anyway, you know, there's numerous local boot clubs going up and down the coast, and obviously in WA and all that kind of jazz. So I think once they strengthen, and then we can move to like a state national levels, or even working with Surf New South Wales and Surfing Australia to kind of link those, you know, state titles and national titles into something that can get you on the world tour. I think once all that's harmonized, we're probably going to see it again. But, man, from a Groms perspective, like, say if you're Liam Lucas at the moment that doesn't have a tour to follow here in Australia, doesn't have light at the end of the tunnel onto how to really kind of, you know, perfect your craft, competitive craft, here with some of the best bodyboarders in Australia, and then move on to the world stage. Like, I think Liam's got the skill set to go and do that, but to have the backing, to have the drive, to have something to springboard off, and to see a road and a pathway to get there, it's just not there at the moment. I think it will develop, but yeah, it's just like to see Jai Taylor do it is amazing. I just think there needs to be something more internally done here in Australia, on like a state and national level, before we can start to see, you know, consistent Australians competing on the junior and the world tour.
Yeah, I think even the start, like in the New South Wales part of it, I'm not so much sure about the other states, but like even the states this year were a little bit disappointing. Like they cut the entries really early so they could make the day into one instead of two, and like they did little things like that, like which was like, oh man, you want. People, I know people have a time limit to get like into these events, but well, I'll tell you this, because I tried to get in, and then it was like, oh no, it was shut a while ago because, yeah, basically they just wanted to cut the field to cut the days down, just to initially save money, which that's where like the state and the nationals need to be pumped up, and the nationals, like, if I'm being honest, like, we run a bodyboard club. I didn't even know that they were on until it was over. And I'm thinking, fuck, like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, that should be the really big platform for Australian bodyboarding, where we're all pumped up on it and watching it and following it and et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, if I'm not hearing about it and I run a bodyboard club, like, that's a little bit of a worry, in my opinion.
It is. I think that's where it needs. Unified, and I think we need to work with those governing bodies, Surfing New South Wales and Surfing Australia, and I guess, you know, Surfing Vic, Surfing WA, Surfing SA, and just make sure, yeah, Surfing Queensland, that we're kind of all on the same pathway. It's a minefield out there, and we've got to continually battle through it. But I think the tide's slowly turning. There's definitely been a lot more interest in the last couple of years in bodyboarding here in Australia, and I hope that we can continue on with it. And I think the Cold Coast Bodyboarding Club and all those local club comps, they're the answer, man. Because once you get those feet on the ground there and flippers in the water and people frothing on bodyboarding at that level, like we'll touch on the Headlands Pro later on in this potty, but like that was a prime example, and just the club comps in general, of how much interest you can generate and how much froth you can generate from, you know, one club comp. So yeah, that's a big thing.
But yeah, for sure.
Let's wrap up the IBC with the women, and yep. It was an all Japanese final, man. You know, we had Sari Ohara, reigning world champion, coming in just behind countrywoman Namika Yamashita with a total of 12.75 versus Sari's 12. Pretty tight one, but again, it came down to wave selection and the bigger set waves. And Yamika could just get those bigger, loopy outside rolls kind of on lock during that final, where Sari seemed not out of sorts, but just a little bit out of rhythm and didn't get the waves that she usually does, and probably couldn't capitalize as well as she usually does. So it was an interesting one, and good to see, you know, a little bit of a mix-up, because Sari's been on such a tear, and you obviously want to see winners keep winning, but it's great to see a fresh face in there.
Yeah, like that was cool. Like I watched the final and I was thinking, oh, like there's no way Sari's going to lose this. And to see her come back and beat her, it was actually kind of, I mean, I'm always a fan of the favorite, but it was cool to see the underdog kind of come up and win. And it was close too. But and Sari got it. I don't know if you knew this, but she got a 10 in a previous heat. So
really,
like, yeah, it was on Instagram. She didn't know her. I think it was in a quarter. But that was pretty cool. Like, so like, if you're coming up against someone that's kind of that strong, yeah, she got a 10 and a quarter against Teresa Padrella.
Yeah, you were. So, right. I'm just checking it now. 16.75 versus 7.75 over the these nationalists. That's insane.
She rips, man. She rips, and they're really nice girls. Like if you listen to the heat interviews and that, like it's very competitive, mate. Like Neymar's still there. She got to the semis. I think she's 48 years old, and I believe she's traveling.
Hey, oh man, let's talk about Neymar Carvalho. Like what the fuck?
Her and Yuri are drinking the same fucking protein shake, aren't they? Because they just don't fucking stop.
Let's put the protein shake in. I reckon they're in some sort of fucking cult. Like this is insane. That like sacrificing lambs and sheep to the gods or something. Like what? Drinking their blood. Like how are they getting this youth and vitality on their side?
I don't know, man. It's crazy, eh? But I mean,
it's a Brazilian barbecue. The Brazilian barbecue is what I'm putting it down to. They are just on the meat train.
Yeah, mate. Sahi bowls and fucking just lots of vitamin D out on the beach playing soccer all day. Like fucking hell, mate. What are we doing? I'm in my hoodie and I'm like I'm all cold. Like let's get to Brazil, mate.
Dude, great Asahi. You got beach soccer. You got Brazilian barbecue, and you got good weed too. There's a lot of things being ticked off over there that are really to my liking. And I think I might just have to pick up the family. There's surely pools over there. Just going to fucking relocate. Fuck it.
Yeah. There'd be a lot of pools, mate, and you would probably have a heart attack if you saw them too. They would be up to your standards, unfortunately.
Nothing on the blower to help out with, mate.
Yeah, I know. That's right. But, mate, yeah, that I mean, as much as we whinge about the event, like a lot of people were in it. So that like we've said before, like with the events even we've had, even the Shark Island Challenge, it would have been amazing to be there, man. It would have been sick to be there and watch it and feel the energy and, you know, surf before the comp and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, once again, it's just more of a spectator's thing. It's just not ideal.
Yeah, when you're not there, but now to feel the energy. And yeah, it looks like a really nice place to go. It looks like the infrastructure's sick. It looks like a great island to visit. You know, shout out to Jay Reel, another, you know, epic cameo on the commentary. I hope to see him.
Yeah, he was definitely the best.
Yeah. Just making it real and, you know, no pun intended, but like just, you know, years upon years upon decades, almost close to centuries of wave knowledge. And, you know, watching back in some of the clips on YouTube, man, back in the 80s and 90s, like we were speaking about off air before, like he's been competing and commentating for a very long time. And he is a sophisticated mind that, yeah, kind of, you just want to listen to and you stop speaking and you put down whatever you're doing when he speaks and commentates about, you know, what's going on in the heats so, on the finals. So, yeah, huge shout out to Jay. And, yeah, like a bearable comp overall. Again, understand with the money, understand with the different location. It's in the Pacific. I get it. It's semi-ticking the boxes of making it a world tour, but – yeah, just if there could be another wave that was found that would might just allow for a higher level of bodyboarding, it's probably going to be beneficial. But I guess there's a lot of moving wheels and cogs that kind of, you know, turn over in that organization. So, you know, no hard feelings, just kind of just from a fan wanting a little bit more from an event that you stay up to all hours of the fucking morning and watch.
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's lots of waves there. Fucking,
fuck it.
You know, logistically it might be a nightmare, but because I saw a little reel before they started, and they were like building the infrastructure and that, and it's pretty full on. Like the government's obviously pouring a fair bit of money into it, so you know, you and I, we're on. You know, we're couch surfing, fucking saying, why don't we put it on the wave that you've got to get to by a boat. Like, it's not realistic, is it? So, but, you know, it would be good if it was a better wave somewhere in the
vicinity. Well, you see it well too, don't you? You see it, like, you know, how good was the G-Land comp that they had back in the
'90s
or whatever it was, and then, you know, they've come back to G-Land again. It was a bit of a flop. They're not going back there again for a long time. The logistics and the money and the resource you've got to pour into it for what you get back out of it. The WSL is running at a loss, so to speak, and it's only being propped up by a billionaire who's, you know, using it as a tax write-off because his missus loves surfing. So, you know, it's, yeah, don't be too harsh on the IBC. But the one thing I want to round out with the IBC before I move on to a couple other topics in this potty, Coops, was the simmering rumours that are popping up since the last front-on comp, and we're nearing to the 2024 edition of the front-on pro, which I hope it goes ahead, because we've also heard rumours of that possibly falling through with feuds internally with promoters and people on the ground, and you know, again, politics will be politics, but coming from good sources at the moment that the riders of that event, of the 2023 Front On Pro, have still not been paid and have actually impacted their ability to compete on this year's World Tour and to continue on their fight for a world title. And I just want to say here and now that it has got to be of the highest priority if you are running an international bodyboarding comp that your product, i.e. the athletes who put on the show, make the product essentially entertaining, get their back pockets lined as soon as they are deserved of it, because you aren't going to have the best of the best competing for that much longer if they're not getting paid what they deserve. Essentially, these athletes are in a business transaction with this organization, business relationship, and the transaction is, if I perform and I get to a certain level in this comp, or I appease the criterion which you have laid down, I will be rewarded with a financial gain. And it is not fucking happening. And it's not the first time it's happened in the IBC. It's happened various times. And not to poke fun at the organization or the staff for that matter, but I dare say a lot of the fucking staff, if not all the staff, contractors, commentators, judges, event organizers, are getting paid. So if they're getting fucking paid and they're turning up, why the fuck aren't the athletes from surfing one of the heaviest, most frightening, most death-defying waves in the world aren't getting paid for their efforts? It infuriates me, because business, good business is good business. And when both parties don't win, it's a fucking loss. I don't care if one party gets all the lion's share and and the other party gets nothing else. It's not business. It's a fucking raping. And it's just, yeah, it kind of crushes my soul a little bit talking about this. And I'd like to hear your take on it, because, you know, fucking cunts need to be paid.
Yeah, I was a little bit shocked at this. Like, I mean, I actually wasn't surprised, because it's happened before and we've heard about it. It's obviously got to do with either the promoter or the person that's paying the bills, meaning the sponsor, which in a lot of cases is the government in some of these events. So in the Eureka one, I believe it was the government. So apparently it happened halfway through the comp, and then, you know, the poor riders are the last ones to get paid, because everyone else has probably been paid that's helping out for the event. And then they've, you know, they run all of a sudden, the money that was supposed to be there isn't. And it's like, oh, well, somebody's going to miss out here, which happens in business, in dodgy business. And unfortunately, in this case, it's the riders, because they're the last ones to get paid, because it's not till the end of the event. So I'm speculating that. If it was my event, being a promoter, I myself as the promoter would be the last one getting paid. If something like this was happening, where the money was cut halfway through it, or whatever. You want to hope that the money, this wasn't known before the event started, because it's just fucking straight out wrong to get people to spend their hard-earned dollar and then put their bodies on the line. And then knowing that they're not going to get paid is fucking flat out criminal, basically. So it's a little bit concerning to hear this, man, because that's got to be – that's if that's the case, and I believe it is because it's a very good source, that's two events, two of the best events on the whole world tour that aren't paying the riders, and that's fucked, man.
Well, sure, and then you've got one of those events, Rika, which is now no longer on because of disagreement.
That's the one. That's the one I'm talking about.
You know,
Rika and Fronton, the two best events on the whole fucking tour, are now looking like they're not paying their riders. Like, that's fucked, man.
But you've got Pierre and Tanner, and it possibly might be why the reigning world champion has walked away from the sport this year, because of that whole debacle and left a sour taste in his mouth, not getting paid for such a long period of time. And then you've got doubts over this year's Fronton comp because of this exact debacle, which is flared up, you know, internal drama within the hierarchy of these event structures and the athletes themselves. It's just like, it's not the look that an international bodyboarding corporation needs. And, you know, for example, let's just use this front and center, Sean Gregory Cooper. You hold the Headlands Pro, the inaugural Headlands Pro.
Biggest event of the year, let's be honest.
Huh?
Biggest event of the year, let's be honest.
Biggest event of the year. Fucking no. We had every cunt down there. It was pumping. You had Channel 9 News, the local Win News down there. That was it. But, like, you know, you got a pump and Eastwell, the families, the communities down there, everyone's loving. You got Brendan Newton on the mic, you know, you got Declan McMullen down there, you know, shouting out some fucking epic commentary too. You've got world-class judges, you've got just Nanu and your two beautiful sons just cruising the headland. It was like euphoric, you know what I mean? It was an epic day. I loved it. I somehow made the final, flopped around and almost drowned out there. And then, you know, the end of the day comes, we'll have a beer, we'll have a yarn. You win, which, you know, rightly so, because you are the undisputed of king of headlands, my good friend. No, take it on the chin. Anyway. Don't fucking try and talk way out of a cunt. I know you.
It's talkable, but go on.
Yeah. And so then that all happens. You have a great day. I'm just going home buzzing on a good day and frothing. I wake up the next morning and you've already transferred me my fourth place prize into my bank account, man. You know what I mean? Like, you are a small first-time local bodyboarding club that's made a huge splash and you've done an amazing job. I'm not saying small to, like, talk you guys down, but you're just starting out and you've done such an incredible job. Like, it's I drive down from Cronulla for it because I love it, and you guys are all such good boys. And then – and you put on such a good show. And then for you to back that up with a financial numeration, you know, straight back into my account, which I didn't even expect, just shows how committed you are to the cause, and you just know good business. You say something, you follow through with it. For example, the Shark Island Challenge, Ben Sawyer wins, and he has, from the Presidente, Mark Sadler, 10 grand in his account the next day.
Yeah. That's Jerry confirmed too, because I asked him 2 days later. I said, have you been paid? And he goes, man, there was 10 grand in my account the next day, man. I'm like, booyah.
Now so let's think about that, all right? Again, this was, you know, Mark, Sam and myself's first time running that comp. It was you know, Idris, Frapp, Declan, Brendo, and your first time running that comp. And we all put in, got it done, had a great time doing it, stressful at times, but don't get me wrong, it was really good. And everyone got paid at the end of the day. They got what they got promised, and it was all good. Why on earth can a fucking local and national comp get that done within days of the comp concluding and an International Bodybuilding Corporation, where these athletes and riders heavily rely on this money in their account to continue on their campaigns, cannot cough up the fucking money. What is it now? 8, 9, 10 months down the line?
It's a fucking joke, cunt!
Oh.
It's not right, man. It's simple business. Like, that's simple, mate. Somebody takes care of the money. Somebody's got to pay the judges. Somebody's got to pay the fucking guy putting the scaffolding up and down. Somebody's got to pay probably some of the riders even get paid. I don't know. But the commentators, this and that, pay the accommodation for them to come. Like, it's a proper business. Like, that's somebody's job. And then they don't get paid. It's obviously because the money's not there. So it's fucking... It's very, it doesn't sound good, man. Doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it sounds real fishy. It sounds like a whole fucking bucket of fish guts to me, brother.
Unless the money's getting stolen, which is very possible too. Like,
fucking
you know,
up.
Like we were saying before, I just came back from Mexico and the money there gets stolen all the time. Like, anything to do with the government is, like, everything's paid by stolen money. So it's – I just hope it's not internally in our sport, because that would be so disappointing, man. But unfortunately, some of these countries there, Chile, I think it's a third world country. I thought Chile was doing pretty good. But, the Canaries is Spain, so that's where you kind of like it doesn't add up. It's like, fuck, something's going on, man.
Yeah, we don't want to bring too much negative shade to it, but it's just infuriating when you know that it can be done and it should be done and it needs to be done. So let it be done, and we won't need to fucking talk about this anymore. But we've harped on enough. We've made our points. Let's move on to something fucking positive. The Headland Pro 24. Am I speaking to the winner? Do I have the winner on the other end of the line here?
Oh, mate, it's embarrassing to say, but yeah. it wasn't meant to work out that way. It just happened. Like,
you rigged it. We all know you rigged it. It's been thrown around
It's
in a row now. How do you keep doing this?
I know. I just said to the judges, like, can you just anyone but me, because it just looks so sus, and then they fucking still let me win. Like, what the fuck, man? Like,
dude, you know what I reckon you're making the difference? I reckon you're sneaking out of the house at night, like 2-3 in the morning, the kids are in bed, Nanu's snoring, it's all good to go, and you go down to the Headland, and I almost reckon you get down on your knees and you perform a prayer ritual. And you get in, connected and the vibes and the frequency from that Headland, you almost know where the rock is, you know where every rip and boil is, and I think you are just one with that fucking wave, because it is evident out there, brother.
You know the funny thing about that, exactly what you just said. It's a really good friend of mine. His name's Ryan O'Shea, Ross Clark Jones. He looks exactly like Ross Clark Jones, right? It's uncanny. And he came down to the event to help. He was on the reserve list, et cetera, et cetera. And he was wigging so hard that he fucking left home at midnight. He couldn't sleep. And he said to his wife, Loz, he said, "Oi, fuck, I'm wigging out. I got to go." And he drove down to Headlands and just watched it in the dark. Swear to God, from midnight.
No, he didn't.
Swear to God. He had this massive fucking light that could actually reach the wave, and he was watching it. When he told me, I was like, what part of this story isn't true? Like, that doesn't sound right, man. And he goes, "Oh, no, yeah, I did." I'm like, fucking wigging, man. Like, that's epic. And he's like, yeah, it got real big. And then it dropped off and the storm's gone past. And I'm like, fucking hell. It's like, how good's that for commitment, mate? Love it.
Mate, he's so committed. And I believe everything O'Shea says, because when push came to shove at your 40th, he was happy to take a hit on the Stoogie, and mate, didn't he perform? Oshay, when he wants to go hard, he'll go hard. When he came down the headland that morning, that's unbelievable, Coops. That's just
What we're living again. That's what we're living around, though. That's the vibe. So it's fucking amazing, mate. Like, that's why, like, to get this fucking thing up and running was an absolute nightmare, because just to backtrack a little bit, we had a waiting period all throughout June, like pretty much with the Island comp, and not one east swell came. Like, everything was dead south, and then we basically given up, and then it was getting into July, and, you know, I was going away, school holidays was coming and whatever, and then the school holidays hit, and then all of a sudden, like, Deck messaged me and he goes, "Oi, check the charts next weekend. There's an east swell." And I'm like, "Oh my God, dude. Like, I think I'm over it. Like, I think it's done. Like, it's too late." And then I checked it and I thought, fuck, if we can do this one weekend, we can do it. Like, we can pull it off. But that's our only chance. Because after that, it goes, like, I was going away. Like, people were going away, and then we're going into, like, a bit of a time where it just couldn't happen. And, mate, the swell, it changed 15 times, like, in 1 week. Like, every day it would change twice. I remember I was talking to you and I was going, like, "What do you reckon?" And you were like, yeah, it looks good. And then the next day we were like, "Oh, shit, it's changed." And then it would change back. And then it would change, and then it would change back. And then, so we were basically set to run on the Sunday, and we all went to the wave pool for the Shark Island wave pool thing on the Thursday. And all of us, me, Brendo, Deck, Idris, a whole bunch of guys, we're all, like, Sean Peterson, we're all in the same car doing a fucking road trip to the wave pool, checking the charts, and we were, I'm not kidding, we were all high-fiving each other, like going, "Oh my God, Sunday looks so good. It's like it's 2 meter east swell, building through the day with the tide, winds dead offshore all day. Fucking, this is amazing." And then the next morning, my phone rings and everyone goes, "Look at the charts." And we looked at the charts, and Sunday went from a 2 meter east swell to a 4.5 meter, 14 second southeast swell, which, like, in headlands, it's no good. The winds didn't look that great on that day. And I went from one day to another to I had to make a million phone calls and go, "Oh, look, if we're going to do it, we need to do it on the Saturday," because the building east swell kind of slightly swinging into the afternoon and then kind of east southeast to southeast on the Sunday. And, like, I was just like, I don't know if we can do this. Like, can we pull it off? And then fucking, mate, Brendo went for it. Like, he just fucking sent out a million messages. He rang every single rider. Trying to get the riders to come was another issue. And then, mate, we got it. We got most people there. So we had to cut the field from 24 to 20 to make the day shorter, because the swell was, like, bobbing by the afternoon on Saturday, which I think what you and I can talk about. But to get the thing going, I just feel for these people that run events all the time, because it was a fucking nightmare, man. It's as simple as
that. It was. But also, too, you are at a very thick wave, and you're at a wave that, like, you need certain set of conditions, and if you don't get those certain set of conditions, like, you know, from Sunday when it changed from an east swell to a southeast swell, other places could probably handle that. Like, say at the Island, if you had an east swell to a southeast swell, you'd be like, "Oh, well, fuck, it's not going to be as straight, but there'll still be some sick ones, whatever. Beach, you'll be the same," you know, fucking so many places. But for that to happen at Headies is a huge thing. So, yeah, super stressful and nerve-wracking. I remember speaking on Friday when you were at work, and I was at work too, and you were just – you were a different man. You were like – you were like dumps going, like, fuck, like, it's just a big decision weighing on me. And you guys nailed it. You pulled it off, and changing it back to the Saturday was all time, and it was the –
yeah, we pulled it off. It wasn't all time. Like, the waves, you know, they were subpar, but we got – we got there. It was pretty much the only Easter we've had since March. So, you know.
But I wouldn't say the first 2 to 3 hours that comp was subpar. Like, there was a couple of gems out there that, like, let's put it this way. Think about Oster's way. Think about Oster's peak barrel, or like first Heddy's bowl barrel into a second Heddy's bowl barrel to an invert on the third Heddy's bowl. Like, that was amazing. Yeah. You got some smokers. Jimmy Cates got some smokers. There was also what's the local fella who's
Elliot Spencer. So yeah, Elliot Elmo. Spencer. Yeah, he was ripping, mate. I was so stoked for him. So when we went through so just to let everyone know the format, we were basically like, let's kind of do like the old school Shark Island days where it was like 12 locals, 12 blow-ins, and we ended up cutting that back to 10 and 10 because of time. And we pretty much got it half and half, more or less, like a couple of local blow-ins in a way, that guys that, you know, aren't from there from day dot, but they surf it a lot. So we kind of like put them on the local side and seeded it that way. But Elliot Spencer, he was like the true local. And I wrote to him and I said, oh, are you in or out? And he's like, yeah, yeah. I'll throw my hat in the ring. And I'm like, yeah, sick. Awesome. I'm like, let's do it. And mate, he just kept going and going and going. He got to the semis and like, he nearly, he was one wave away from beating either you or Osler. Osler in that heat?
Yeah, yeah. He was going to beat me, man. He was going to beat me. I only had one good score and I had a shitty backup score, like a 2 or a 3. And he lost his board. He copped a flogging, lost his board, had to come back out, got a good one, and then just ran out of time towards the end of that semi. And that was me done because, like, you know, he obviously knows how to pick him, and I was just, you know, holding onto the reins and hoping I'd gallop over the line in second place. And, yeah, he was really good to watch out there. And you can, as he was saying, like, it's, you know, always the case. You can just tell the people that surf that wave regularly and know the ones to get. And he also made a couple of good calls of saying how, because it was a pretty unusual swell and it was swinging more east-south-east throughout the day, that it wasn't a classic Heddy's read, and that's why he felt like a lot of people who don't surf the wave kind of got further in the competition than he thought. I don't totally agree with that, but I definitely do agree with it in some ways too. You know, I think sometimes it comes down to just the best competitor on the day and whatever, but local knowledge and reading the wave, i.e. in the Shark Island Challenge, you know, came to the fore there with, you know, essentially three of the four riders being local with Osler, Benny Sawyer and Andrew Lester. So, like, I definitely get it, but yeah, it was a really cool dynamic, and watching like the locals kind of versus the blow-ins, it was sick, man. And you know, in the final itself, man, like James Cates, you know, obviously yourself, Sean Gregory Cooper, Michael Austin, myself, and you know, me just being a fucking passenger out there. I was just getting taken along the East Coast train at that time, and happy to watch waves break on my head, but watching you and Katie go at it was really sick, and yeah, just epic to see that local knowledge really kicking in the final.
Yeah, like you said, the middle, the quarters were really cool. Like the waves were sick, and I knew the morning would be good. I said it to a couple of the boys. I said, look, this is the way the day's going to run out. That we're going to hope that the first few heats aren't too bad because it was dead low tide and a rising swell, and they ended up being okay. And then I was like, I guarantee the middle of the morning is going to be sick. The final is looking iffy, and I knew it by that, and that's why I cut the day down by from 24 to 20 just to save literally an hour. And I like, because the swell was just, it just said, I think I was reading 3.5 meters at 14 seconds on the east coast of Australia, which is massive. Like, it's just too, like, at that wave anyway, it just doesn't handle.
Bro, it kind of got scary towards the end. Like, we were six boys out the back of that final. Like, as in, you know, the first 10 minutes of that final was just bearable, but the last 20 minutes of it, like, there was so much water coming in. It was like, You'd just get out to the boil takeoff spot. Then there'd be 3 8-footers out the back. The first one to get under, the second one to push it further into the zone, and you'd probably get clipped. You'd have to do a 5-minute tour back around. And then to kind of get back in the spot with that sweep was gnarly. Like, it was a pulsing swell.
It was pulsing, eh? And, I mean, you know, Casey and I, we definitely surfed it like that a million times. So that definitely paid off in that case of exhaustion too, because I think exhaustion was getting the better of most of us. And then get your waves and get your score type thing. Like, it was a bit of a lackluster final, but it is what it is. I kind of benefited from that in the end, but, you know, I was just happy with the day that everyone turned up and we kind of pulled it off. I mean, if anyone's interested in going in it next year, like, I reckon we can do it again. I would love it to just be 3 foot, because it's an amazing wave at 3 foot. It's really performance driven wave. It's good in most tides. When I'm talking about an event here, it would be sick to have it at 3 foot. Guys like Liam Lucas and, you know, Ben, if he came, like, Ben was interested in coming, Ben Player, but he like kind of changed his mind because of the swell the following week was looking really good and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, everyone's got their commitments. So it was hard to get people to commit. And I pulled it on everyone at the last second as well. But next year, I'm thinking we might try and kick the Cold Coast Bodyboard Club season off with it. And it's earlier in the season for more east swells and try and get the invite list going earlier so we can kind of get people to commit and have a sick event. Like, I mean, we had 4 women in the event, which was hard to get. But next year I'd love to have 8, you know what I mean, and make it and just kind of make it grow as the years go by. Like, I just love the thought of people coming in. Like, Casey's not a member of the club, and he did that comp, which was so special because he's like pretty much the local lord. He's the best bodyboarder south of Cronulla, and that was so sick to watch. And then to get you guys to come and watch Osler get his fire back, mate, it was fucking amazing. Like, he wanted it bad, and he was the best surfer of the whole event. There's no doubt in my mind. He got the best wave of the event. He would have got the best tube of the event, but they had to give it to – they gave it to Elliot because he got an amazing tube too, but, like, he literally could have taken every single prize. And it was amazing to see him back in his competitive singlet and how good of a fucking bodyboarder he is. And that's what I wanted, mate. Like, I wanted, like, the really good guys to come and go head-to-head against each other at a performance-driven wave, to see that again in Australia, because you can go to the beach breaks and see all that stuff, but to see it at a reef break, it kind of gets you buzzing to boog again, don't you reckon?
Oh, fucking oath, man. I was frothing on that event. I hadn't competed like that in a very long time. I was a bit out of fitness just because of the recent birth of my second boy. But, like, you know, it was when I was in my, like, earlier rounds when I could kick and paddle, man, like, some of the fun barrels and a couple little innies and rolls that I got, like, I was so pumped, man. And, yeah, to, like, Osler, to have him, you know, I remember watching him compete at Pipe in Hawaii, man, like, and you could just see what it meant to him and how he goes about his business and how he calculates everything. And to watch him in the Shark Island Challenge to, you know, just make the way all the way to the final. And, you know, he's exactly like a Tristan Roberts or a Mark McCarthy or a, you know, Sasha Specker or something like that. They've all got it within them. And Ian Campbell, you know, he'd probably hate for me to say that and compare it to him, but, like, he is one of those dudes that is just so clued in when it comes to the competitive mindset, man. Like, he's fascinating to watch. I know I've said this on the potty before, but, like, in anything he does in life, he will compete against you and he will fucking win. And if he doesn't win, he somehow makes up his own head.
Did you see the photo? Did you see the photo of me and him? And, like, I'm stoked because I've won and he's got his head down because he comes third. It's the best photo, mate. Yeah, and I've got the check. I've got the winner's check next to me. I'll send it to you. It's so funny. But Oi, just quickly, like a couple of mentions from that contest, because I've got to get it in, because I really want to run it again. So just to explain how we ran it, we ran and like all the money came from the entry form, basically, which is, I'm assuming that's what the fucking IBC do. But it's the only way to get the money, basically, in such a short amount of time, and put it straight back to the riders, you know what I mean? And the judges. The judges got paid, and then everyone else was volunteers. We had guys like O'Shea and Woodall, and my mate Tully was down there cooking the barbie, and people from the bodyboard club came and helped, and Nanu came, like Nanu put on a show for the kids, and it was sick, mate. But then, and then, like, massive shout out to Brendo. Like, Brendo decided not to go on the event. He was just like, oh, like, I'm thinking I'm not going to do it. And then he kind of said, oh, look, if we can't get a rider, I'll go as a reserve. So I was kind of like hoping it would happen, but we did have a lot of interest, so he didn't have to surf, but he was there. He's so good. He was on the mic all day. He did a microgram session. He fucking he went out into the final and filmed. I don't know. He definitely didn't get any photos because he was just swimming in the raw ocean of the biggest part of the day. It was a moment. It was like, oh my god, is Brendo all right? Like, because it was so big, eh? And he was just
I don't think people understand when you say, oh, yeah, it was big at Headlands, because everyone associates Headland with 3 to 4 foot or 4 to 5 foot, super fun waves, whatever. But, like, it pulsed so much, that swell, man. So much water was moving. You were just at the mercy of the ocean. It was like all four of us and Brendo, all five of us, were just corks bobbing around in the fucking ocean, and we had no say where we were going. Like, I think I've said this before, and like, you guys got in fine, you hugged the reef, but I got caught out and then got sucked out to that left bommy in front of the fucking boat ramp, copping 8 footers, and then ended up 500 meters up the beach towards Sharkies to somehow get in on 6 foot of whitewater and beach myself like a fucking dying humpback whale. Like, it was disgraceful how clogged up, you know what I mean? So, like, it was. Like, and again, I wasn't super fit at the time, but man, it was a pulsing swell. Like, there was a lot of water moving. Hats off to Brendo.
Yeah, are you still there?
Yeah, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought I lost you there for a second. Yeah, man. The other dimension too. It was Luke Aloysius O'Connor in the first two or three heats that you surfed. Mate, you were on a roll. You were on a fucking heater, mate. There was moments like you were getting cheers from the crowd and everything. It was amazing. That one wave where you got a super deep pit, and then what did you do out of it? I can't remember. Did you do a roll or an innie or a flip? I can't remember.
No, I did a roll, and then I tried to – I probably could have done a second one on the end, but I just couldn't fucking see, and I was getting eaten by the whiteboard. But, yeah, man, like, thank you for saying that. I had such a fun time in the first couple of heats. Like, I obviously lost energy towards the end of the day, but, like, man, like, that wave is a good bodyboarding wave. Like, it is proper.
It's a good event, place for an event.
You got to do it again. Like, when you can get behind that boil – now, you're a meter too far behind the ball, you fuck. Like, we all know that. But when you're in that sweet spot, it is incredible how that wave bends in upon itself, and you go from facing, like, you know, northwest to facing almost fucking west, or even like west southwest. It's unbelievable how much it kinks in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and like, shout out to Liam Lucas, Anthony Miller. They came down. Unfortunately, couldn't prevail. They got the wrath of the Gold Coast bodyboarders, but they were there shining, and they stayed till the end. It was sick, man. And like, I was having a good chat to Liam after it, and he's kind of frothing. I actually think he's going to do the club, which was like, if he's keen. I was like, fuck yeah, man, this is sick. So yes, look out, fucking
standard for sure.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was so cool having him there. Like, I was kind of, I mean, you know, I think the conditions kind of got the better of some of us. Like, there was a couple of heats that it kind of went good, and then the next heat was shit. And unfortunately, he kind of like got the raw end of the stick on one of them. Same with Anthony Miller. He was in my first heat, and the our heat was it was horrendous. Like, that's just the start of the day. Just some of the heats just weren't any good, and then, like I said, the next one to be good, and it was like, fuck.
But how many times you watch a Pipe Masters or whatever, and then you'll see these pumping fucking backdoor pits, or pipe will just be going off its head in this west northwest well, and then it goes dead for half an hour, and you're like, cunts are getting like fours and fives, and you're like, where were these waves? And then it just turns on again. It's just the mercy of Mother Nature, and I guess as a competitor, you've just got to change your strategy and focus on something else.
Oh, for sure. Like, I mean, I remember thinking in the final, I was paddling out. I'm pretty sure my two legs weren't working. And it was like, oh, this is a test of survival here. If you get, you just need to get two waves and hope the fuck the other guys don't get any. And that's pretty much what happened.
But like, that was the one, though, wasn't it? Because it's like, you're right. Not many of us could get waves, and there weren't many scoring opportunities. So you got what you got. You got your scores. It was up to us to catch up. That's off.
Yeah, for sure, man. It turned into a contest in that final, man. But it was a great day, man. And thanks for coming, and everyone that came, Idris, and all the boys always helping, all the mums helping, all the grommets came down and were frothing out. The big wigs that came from afar. I just hope that you want to come back next year if we do it. And if anyone's keen, like, I did reach out to a lot of good bodyboarders, but it was just hard to get them at the last second. So hopefully next year we can get it bigger and better, and we can stretch the field a little bit.
That's hoops, man. It might have been hard just because it would have been lighting up a lot of other spots. And if you had like a 1.5 or 2 meter east swell where, you know, is going to be more favorable for that wave, and everyone knows that there's going to be, you know,
that's all we need, man. That's all we need. Seriously. Like, it's so contestable even when it's smaller. Like, you know, you see Liam Lucas, he'll be getting barreled the whole way and then still doing three moves. Like, off the end, you know what I mean? Like, it's because it's not a real short wave, it's a long wave. There's heaps of opportunity there even when it's small. So I'm actually kind of veering towards that next year, and it might take a little bit of stress off me too, man, because far out, that was stressful before that one.
Crazy. I can know. And dude, before we go and we wrap up this epic comp talk episode, I just want to brain about your recent trip to Mexico and how the fuck you got 2 weeks off work, family, and how many tacos and, you know, shots of tequila did you dance?
Tacos que rico los tacos. Oh my god, las tequilas. I had a fantastic trip, mate. I went and saw my old mate, Clive Richter, who if anyone's been to Puerto Escondido in Mexico, you would probably know him. He's from Strati, but he's lived over there for 20 years now. So I went and saw him. Last time I saw him was at my wedding. So it was long overdue, mate. And I was very lucky that Nanu let me go, the good supportive wife that I have. Yeah, massive shout out, mate. That was huge. So she's heading back to Argentina on Friday, so she gets 2 weeks off too, so it's a bit of a even deal. But
separately stay together.
Yeah, it's the way you gotta do it sometimes, and it's just the way it is with the kids at the moment. They're pretty young. But going to Mexico with kids for 2 weeks is not gonna be an option until they're a bit older, because it's a very, very long way. I reckon I had jet lag for the first week of it, but mate, I was first in the water every day. I loved it. We got some sick waves. There was a real good south swell there, like really south swell. And when it's south, it's really, really peaky. So I got really lucky in the first week. And then the second week, a bigger swell came, and that was pretty south as well. There's a bit going on in Porto. There's a lot's changed. Like, a lot of people might have gone that listen to the podcast. It's definitely changed. Like, there's a lot more people going to Puerto Escondido because there's a massive highway that was opened from Mexico City and Oaxaca, so it you can get there a lot easier than you used to be able to. You can just go for the weekend type thing. So, like, lots of Mexicans go there now. There's still lots of surfers around. Do you know? You ever heard of a big wave surfer, Tom Lowe?
Yeah,
I met him there. He's a really, really nice guy, man. And a fucking amazing surfer, eh? But we were chatting about the wave, and it's pretty interesting. If you ever see it and you see video, there is a video out on it at the moment that I don't know who made it. A lot of the locals were involved in it. But they talk about a few things in it that, I kind of agree with some, disagree with a lot of them, because the problems with the beach are pretty obvious, man. Like, they made all these new drains, so they put like 6 or 7 drains in, and now when it rains, like, the water kind of just trickles out of all these separate drains. So the drainage system in Porto is a lot better, but unfortunately, it fucking doesn't wash all the sand back out into the water. So you've got this massive beach. So it's like Cronulla back in the day. You know what I mean? Like, If the sand goes around and around and around in circles, you've got amazing banks. But if it's stuck somewhere and it's not out where it's supposed to be, it kind of changes things. So the wave has changed in a way. It breaks closer to the shore. There's a fair bit more backwash as well. But in saying that, the wave's still sick. Like, I'm going to go back for sure. They got a massive problem at Punta Colorado now too, though. The sewage plant in the town, it's got the plant is right behind Punta Colorado, which is the shore break, beach break. It's around the corner, and the fucking sewage plant doesn't work, mate. Like, they basically just shut it down, and it just overflows into this lagoon next to the wave. So when you go down to Punta Colorado, mate, it's pure sewage. That's all you can smell. It's fucking it is rank, man. I'll send you a video of me walking past it. Like, I walked past it hungover, and I couldn't breathe. It's rank. I mean, like, everyone's the thing is, mate, there's all this misinformation of people saying, oh, it's because there's way more people here that the sewage is happening, but it's not actually true. Like, that's kind of true. The sewage plant probably can't handle it as well, but they just need to upgrade it and fix it. As simple as that. Instead of turning the switch off and walking away and going, oh, well, I don't want to deal with that. And so, unfortunately, mate, the governments, they do things like that. Like, they're like, oh no, we're not spending money on that. So now that actually affects a world-class wave, which is upsetting my one of my best mates, Clive Richter, because that's where he surfs most days. It kind of keeps the crowds away, but when it breaks out, like, it'll break free. It'll be the most disgusting thing you'll ever see. You'll see a black river go out, and it's just raw sewage. Disgusting.
Right. Seriously, create some proper illness and sickness there. Like, you can die from that.
Oh, could you imagine, mate? Like, but there's some shady stuff going on over there. There's a local bodyboard shop, Colorado. It's called Colorado Bodyboard Shop, I think. And the guy that owns it, he's been real vocal on it. And he was on his Facebook page the other day. And because he's been so vocal, the police came to him and they were like pepper spraying him. And, like, he was, like, full-on fearing for his life. And it's because, like, whenever you speak up in countries like that, they just come and shut you down, basically. And, unfortunately, it's happening. And the reason that it's so bad is it's affecting a world-class wave. That's why, like, I'm talking about it, because it's, like, it was in the middle of nowhere and it wasn't affecting anyone. I suppose it's probably happening everywhere around the world in certain countries. But In this part of Mexico, it's really sad because it's affecting a really good wave.
But it's also pain, man, you know what I mean? And I guess, you know, if you look back to our history, it was only back in the late 90s, early 2000s that those stink pipes off Kurnell there and off Bondi were redirected another 3 or 4 Ks out to sea. So we didn't, and Manly for that matter. So we didn't get, when the Southeaster blew, we didn't get that shit rolling back onto the beach that we were copping from our main city centres. So I can understand how it has happened, because without, you know, people stamping their feet up and down, you aren't going to see change. But at the same time, it's still, and Mexico is a third world country, so I guess that there's things to be improved on there. But, you know, in this day and age, like, fuck, can we just get some sewage treated properly or directed away into a holding tank that you can just deal with it on like a later basis and put a plan in place instead of just squandering the money that's probably put there for the taxpayers, by the taxpayers, whatever it is, and just burying your heads in the sand and ignoring the problem. It's a fucking joke, and it took the surfers here on the east coast of Australia to really kick up a stink to get any sort of change. So to see that in Mexico and someone just getting pepper sprayed for having their own opinion on it, it's a tough world out there, eh?
Yeah, mate, I feel real sorry for them, because it's kind of an uphill battle, and I mean, fingers crossed that it like gets resolved somehow, because they had another problem there where that was actually going to turn into it. They were going to gut the whole beach and turn it into a marina for these massive cruise ships, and they protested it. I was there 10 years ago, and I walked through the streets and protested it, and it kind of, like, there was money there. It was going to be spent on that, and then someone stole the money and it disappeared. So that's the way it kind of happens. But, like, to deal with sewage in a, it's turning into a major town. Like, there's the airport there is actually international now. I don't know if it's official, but it's going to be an international airport. So it's going to be a major city. Like, they've got to fucking sort it out, mate. Like, it's so disgusting. Like, come on. But in saying that about Porto, like, everyone's talking about how it's changed and heaps more infrastructure and that. Yeah, like, there's a few new things. There's definitely more people. It's pretty crowded. But it's an amazing place. It's the best beach break in the world, hands down. Some people will write me off on that. But it's the best beach in the world. 100%. Amazing.
Fuck yeah. I'm agreeing with that wholeheartedly, Sean Gregory Cooper. You've surfed a lot of waves in your time. You've been all around the world. And if you're throwing it down on the table, I'm putting my money where your mouth is. And on that note, I think we should sign off on the comp talk. We've covered some epic fucking topics. And it's been good, bad, and ugly, but we've spoken our minds. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on, giving up your hard-earned time on this late Friday night to dissect the world of bodyboarding. And let's do it again soon.
Yeah, big brother. Thanks for having me, and I will talk to you very soon.
Fuck yeah. Giddy up. See you in the pool soon, brother.
See you, bro. You.